I'm called again to the belly bar, spinning on whether it be you or home. Now I'm just to serve, be a beggar as a king, tell you the truth for why. A king cannot swagger nor drink like a beggar, nor be half as happy as I. So let the back of the sides go very bold, let the hands and feet grow tall, again to the belly boys, beer enough, whether it's be new or old. Now I've sixpence in my pockets and I've worked hard for that. Landlord, here it is. There's never any Turks gonna make me work while begging is as good as it is. So let the bank and the sides go very bold, let the hands and feet grow cold, again to the belly boys, beer enough, whether it's been new or old. And sometimes we come at a nobleman's hall, beg for brand and beer. Sometimes we're lame, sometimes we're blind, sometimes too deaf to hear. So let the bank and the sides go very bold, let the hands and feet grow cold, again to the belly boys, beer enough, whether it's been new or old. Sometimes we lie like pigs in a sty, flocks are strong on the ground. Sometimes eat a crust that's buried in the dust, and be thankful if that can be found. So let the back and the sides go very bold, let the hands and feet grow cold, but again to the belly boys, beer enough, whether it's been new or old. Yes, I just to sin, be a beggar as a king, tell you the truth for why. A king cannot swagger nor drink like a beggar, nor be half as happy as I. So let the bank and the sides go very bold, let the hands and feet grow cold, again to the belly boys, beer enough, whether it's been new or old.
I tell you, sitting in the pit playing, well, not the pit, but it's another pit, playing hornpipes and waltzes all day doesn't do much for the vocal cords. That's a drinking song. As far as I know, drinking songs, there aren't that many that are found this side of the Atlantic, are there? Apart in the tradition, let's say.
Not 16th
century. No, but songs in the tradition, you know. You get some that have been printed in songbooks from the 20s and before, such which are usually sort of poetic gems of someone or other, author anon. But one is, it was early last November, as near as I remember, I was walking down the street in tipsy pride. No one was I disturbing when I lay down by the curbing, and a pig came up and lay down by my side. As I lay there in the gutter, thinking thoughts I could not utter, a lady passing by was heard to say, you can tell a man who boozes by the company he chooses. And the pig got up and slowly walked away. Which is sort of a drinking song. And as far as I know, that's American. Although I don't know anything else about it. There were a number of songs from the... Oh, I think probably from the 20s, maybe earlier. There are certainly a lot of temperance songs that were written, but sort of vaudeville songs, things like the Salvation Army Lassie. But songs that sort of out and out say how grand it is to go out to the pub and drink beer, and aren't we all having fun? I don't really know of that many in the American tradition. Common in British. Yeah?
There's one that Art Thames sings a lot, and I don't know where he's
out in Soho on Saturday night, and it's not Soho in London.
Soho in New York?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Oh.
And the refrain is, isn't it queer how some women drink beer, they drink and they drink and get tight, and the new license plan, well, it ain't worth the damn in Soho on Saturday night. But then the verses, which are a fairly complicated tune that I don't know at all, about the Carnegies and the Mellons.
Huh, okay. Other examples that vaguely come to mind are some of the old-timey and country songs, particularly about moonshine. Again, probably from the 20s, although they maybe went back before that. Songs about the repeal of prohibition, you know. America, you see, prohibition could not be. You made your law against the rock and rye. Something like that. I don't sing these songs, of course. Yeah.
I was just trying to look for a reason other than prohibition or something like that. You mentioned the other day that many of the broadsides were sung in a community pub.
Yeah.
With a group of people who lived together.
Who lived together, right.
Now, we're singing together in a pub each night.
Yeah.
We know each other to a certain extent, at least to the degree that we are here for a common purpose.
Uh-huh.
But most of the people I drink with in my hometown, I don't know them.
Right.
They're late,
right.
It's a we don't want to sing together or not. We probably couldn't pick a song we all like.
It's a very different kind of social community when one considers the people who populated America. Looking at, you know, America's history, the people who came over from Britain were mostly people who just did not have the freedom in their own community to practice their own religion, for example. And they were primarily religious people. Other people who tend to travel, it's historically always been the same, have been people who didn't quite fit in to the community, so they've tended to leave it. I think that's one reason why you don't get much in the way of sort of indigenous stuff like Morris dancing over here that was done in England and would have been done at the time when a lot of people were leaving England to come over here, because the people who were doing that were the people who were very integrated into their own community, and they were the people who wouldn't leave.
The only drinking song that I know of from Cleveland that I've heard is really Slovak. It's in English, but it goes, they're still singing in the bar down the street from where I live. It goes, American man works every day, 20 on the bar, give us each a glass so that we can drink on payday. When they had drunk, they beat each other up. To jail in the morning, to work in the evening, pay $5 to the court. Hat I have old, falls from my head. Clothes my clothes, all holes and patches, I'll buy for me new ones on payday. On the 15th of the month, and also the 30th, 20 on the bar, give us each a glass so that we can drink on payday.
That's great.
You have to sing that before you start drinking. What's the time signature?
It brings to mind on the hat that I have on, it is a greasy gun, and as you can tell by its shining, it used to fasten up with a button and a loop, but now it's all worn out to the lining. It's all through the ale, the confounded ale, all through the ale and tobacco, with a whack from the diddle and the day, all through the ale and tobacco. The coat that I have on, it is so far run down, it's out at the sleeves and the elbows. It's needing of repair like a soldier in despair. It's been 7 years in the battle. It's all through the ale, the confounded ale, all through the ale and tobacco. With a whack from the diddle on the day, all through the ale and tobacco. The breeches I have on, they are so far run down, me legs, yes, I plainly can see them. parted song, you've two, but it's so long since they was new, and I never had a penny to put in them. And it's all through the ale, the confounded ale, all through the ale and tobacco. With a wag from the day, from the diddle on the day, all through the ale and tobacco. Stockings I have two, but I never had a shoe, and me boots, they are open to all weathers. I pulled them off and on till the undersoles are gone, and shockingly destroyed the upper leathers. It's all through the ale, the confounded ale, all through the ale and tobacco. With a wag from the diddle on the day, all through the ale and tobacco. As for me rags, I don't give a jag, I'm not afraid that anyone should rob me. And when I am dead, you can put it on me grave, I left this old world as it found me. It's all through the ale, the confounded ale, all through the ale and tobacco. With a wag from the diddle on the day, all through the ale and tobacco. Roy Harris, who collected that song, collected it from an old lady in Derbyshire, and the adjacent county from where he lives, and he went up there. It was the only song she really knew. It's obviously a version of Orphan McGrog, which is which you find all over the place. There's a really nice Australian version of Orphan McGrog that I heard. But anyway, he invited Roy in and said, would you like something to drink? And he said, sure, expecting a cup of tea, which one usually gets from one informant. And it turned out that she was, she made quite nice wine, you know, dandelion wine and that sort of stuff. And it turned out to be quite potent wine. And Roy says that when he got back home, he sort of overslept. We finally woke up, missed his stop, got off the bus one stop too far, forgot the tape recorder, left it on the bus, went back to the bus station the next morning, and unfortunately the tape recorder was there, which is why we have that song from him. We started with a question on drinking songs, and we were discussing their absence or difference in drinking songs in the American and Appalachian tradition, since that's what I thought we were doing today. Is Mike coming?
That's his chair.
We will meet, but we will miss him. There will be one vacant chair.
We'll call him Elijah. It's a little hard to do cross-referencing, isn't
cross-referencing
it?
Without our cross-referencing.
Yeah.
Now you're here, what we might do is the song that we promised to do yesterday.
Ah, good. Why don't we do that one? Which at least has an American connection. And then perhaps what we'll do is sing some American and perhaps also English versions. We've increasingly, as we've been singing approaching 20 years now in this country, increasingly looked for and found ourselves preferring in some ways American variants of ballads. I'm a very strong believer in when you do something long enough, it doesn't matter where you come from, it's where you live now which shapes the way you sing, the way you play, the way you dance and move. I know that's true with my dancing. When I go to England now and do collecting of dances, I don't even bother telling them I'm English. I dress like an American, I talk like an American, and I move like an American, and I set about doing things like an American. I Morris dance like an American, you know, and so on. And they simply don't believe it. You very quickly, I think, acquire regional qualities when you live in one place, and I think that's true. The tunes, the feeling of the tunes, very much, and the text, the ways of expressing ideas, content within songs, is shaped very much, I think, by where and how you live. That was the theme, of course, of Alan Lomax's great adventure or misadventure, depending on who your teacher happens to be, in Countermetrics, which is an attempt to measure song style and do this among all the countries in the world and try and correlate them with a computer. That was the major problem with the work, and was trying to get data down so you can actually do statistics with them in a computer, and you lose a lot the instant you do that. But the idea was that song style and dance style, with a system that he called choreometrics, reflected who you were, what your climate was, what you did for a living, what your system of government was, whether you kept domesticated animals, how you managed your life, what your attitudes towards upbringing, raising your children was, and so on and so forth. And there are very tantalizing statistical correlations that indicate certain ways of singing, certain aspects of singing style reflect aspects and reinforce.
But you see, if you lived in the mountains, then your tunes tended to jump about a lot, and if you lived on the plains, they didn't.
That's not about the sum of it. that's the part that's easy to make fun of. I think chickens and cows make a difference in how you sing, and the answer is yes, they do. Because if you are a kind of culture that raises chickens and cows and horses for a living, that sets, there's all sorts of other things that go on with that, and all of those other things have to do with how you breathe, what patterns, what colors you use, and so on and so forth. And song style and dance style is an expressive form that is consistent with that. Anyway, the point of this preamble was that if you live in this country for 20 years and sing, that much as we think of ourselves as English singers, a lot of what we do is very American in style, and to me some of that gets reflected in ending up preferring and looking for American variants of ballads, particularly New England ones. This is neither, but it was written by a man who spent quite a bit of time in this country, and I suppose if you were good enough at doing this kind of analysis, you could find out how Rudyard Kipling's writing was affected by his life in this country. It was in trivial ways. The Just So stories, many of them have references to places in New Hampshire and Vermont in them. He lived in Brattleboro, was married to an American, a Vermonter, and they lived next door to his brother-in-law until they had a squabble and he went back to England. Anyway, this is a song that he wrote, pretty well-known, think of it as a poem, but it's really a song. He was very well-versed in English language folk song. And it was one from a set of stories about Puck of Pook's Hill, the last of the little people left in England. And the second book was Rewards and Fairies. And two small children mistakenly enacted a scene from Midsummer Night's Dream on Midsummer Eve in a fairy ring. Out comes Puck and proceeds by throwing leaves of oak, ash and thorn in their laps to take them back through time to see all the amazing things that have happened on that silly little island. And this is the one that was known as the Smuggler's Song. And this setting is by our good friend Peter Bellamy. Watch the wall, my dear. Well, gentlemen, go by. His feet. Don't go drawing back the blinds, nor looking in the street. Then the task, no question, isn't told to lie. Watch the wall, my darling, while the gentlemen go by. 25 ponies trotting through the dark, with brandy for the pass and a banky for the clerk. Laces for a lady and letters for a spy. Watch the wall, my darling, while the gentlemen go by. Running round the wood lump, if you chance to find little barrels roped and tarred, all full of brandy wine. Don't you shout to come and look, nor use them for your play. Put the brushwood back again, and they'll be gone next day. If you see a stable door set and open wide, if you see a tired horse lying down inside, if your mother mends a coat all cut about and tore, if the lining's wet and warm, don't you ask no more. If you see King George's men all dressed in blue and red, you be careful what you say and mindful what is said. If they call you pretty names and chuck you neath the chin, don't you tell where no one is, nor yet where no one's been. Knocks and footsteps round the house, whistles after dark.
You've no cause to run and look until the house dogs bark. Trust is here, pinch is here, and see how dumb they lie. They don't fret to follow while the gentlemen go by. There's a chance you'll be given a dainty doll all the way from France, with a cap of Valenciennes and a velvet hood, a present from the gentleman along with being good. 25 ponies trotting through the dark, with brandy for the dance and a banky for the clown. Ask no questions, isn't told a lie. Watch the wall, my darling, while the gentlemen go by.
Oh, he wrote them as songs.
Do people know tunes?
Well, Peter Bellamy, who is a real Kipling nut. I mean, he was president of the Kipling Society in England, Kauai, that kind of thing. Peter very much is of the theory that Kipling had a tune in mind when he wrote them, often a traditional tune. And Peter's settings, he's attempted to set all the barrack room ballads and all the ones out of these. And what he saw his task as being was trying to discover what tune it was that Kipling had in mind. So he just absorbed himself in the texts and sort of waited until the tune emerged. And the tunes that he set to them are variants of traditional tunes that would likely have been the sorts of things kicking around. A lot of times it's not that hard to guess. Margaret MacArthur's an interesting person to talk to about that process, because she oftentimes had a manuscript of words that she'd found with reference to, you know, somewhere in Marlborough, some up in Vermont, and somebody, she had a text that was written in a diary somewhere, and Margaret then, you know, sort of, oftentimes from the poetry you can tell what the tune was. And there weren't that many tunes really kicking around, I think, you know, a lot of times there'd be a basic stock of tunes that would be well known. And the broadside sellers on both sides of the Atlantic printed them to the tune of. There is a Bert Lloyd in his book Folk Song Lingering tells a story of the larger broadside publishing houses having a resident fiddler who'd sit in the corner, you know, picking his nose until somebody came along with a text and said, "Here, I've got this tune," and he'd look at it and he'd say, "Oh yeah, we'll use Soldier's Joy on that one," and he'd play it along, "Yeah, that fits," and he'd say to the tune of Soldier's Joy, and off it go, put it on the press. And he'd sit there and just, you know, figure out which tune went with the text. So that whole process is one that is, not uncommon.
Well, would Kipling have had any Vermont tunes that he...
Well, that's a good question.
Do they have tunes?
Do they have tunes in Vermont, sir? You'd like to step outside. yes, ask Margaret tomorrow. Very active. The Helen Harkness Flanders collection, which was made primarily after World War II, is actually now available for many years. It was kept in a basement in Middlebury College. With nobody able to get at it. But now it's been catalogued, and you can now hear some of these incredible singers. See, do we have a...
Sing the Good King John.
Oh, yeah, here's one of my favourites out of the collection, which is one of those songs that actually survives better in North America than it does in England. It's clearly an English ballad or broadside or one of those things, but thrived over here and hard to find in England. It's child ballad name is King John and the Bishop of Canterbury. It goes like this. Has some wonderful Vermont turns of phrase in it. It's one of those Derry Down songs. A story of one about an old man, and his name was King John. He was a man of great mirth. He did great deeds and he righted all wrongs. Chorus. To me down, down, Derry I down. One day the king, to make himself merry, he sent for the Bishop of Canterbury. "Good morning, Mr. Bishop, they tell unto me that you keep a far better house than me. Demi down, down, Derry I down. Well, you must answer to my questions three, or your head shall be taken from your body. And if you don't answer to them all right, your head shall be taken from your body quite. Demi down, down, Derry I down. The first as I sit on my royal estate, with my golden crown all on my old pate, with all my nobility, joy and great mirth, you'd tell to me one penny just what I'm worth. Demi down, down, Derry I down. The second one is, without any doubt, how long I'll be travelling this whole world about. And the third one is that when I do wink, you're to tell to me presently just what I think. Demi down, down, Derry I down. The bishop has gone returning home. He met an old shepherd, and that all alone. Good morning, Mr. Bishop, the shepherd did say, what news do you bring us from court today? Demi down, down, Derry I down. Well, I must answer the king's question three, or my head will be taken from my body. And if I don't answer to them all right, my head shall be taken from my body quite. Demi down, down, Derry I down. The first as he sits on his royal estate, with his golden crown all on his old pate, with all his nobility, joy and great mirth, I'm to tell to him one penny just what he's worth. Demi down, down, Derry I down. The second one is, without any doubt, how long he'll be travelling this whole world about. And the third one is that when he does wink, I'm to tell to him presently just what he thinks. Demi down, down, Derry I down. Well, are you a man of learning and wit to answer the question so soon put to it? For just one soon of your fine apparel, I'll go to King John and I'll answer the quarrel. Demi down, down, Derry I down. Oh, one suit of clothes I surely will give, and £5 a year as long as you live. For the shepherd is dressed and off he has gone to answer the questions of royal King John. Demi down, down, Derry I down. Good morning, Mr. Bishop, the king he did say, have you come to live or to die today? Well, I hope your grace will pardon me, but I've come to answer to your questions three. Demi down, down, Derry I down. Hope you know them by now. I hope you have good answers ready. The first is, you sit on your royal estate, with your golden crown all on your old pate, with all your nobility, joy and great mirth, I'm to tell to you one penny just what you're worth. Demi down, down, Derry I down. For 30 pieces our Saviour was sold among the people so barbarous and bold. So I guess 29 must be your just due, for I think he was one penny better than you. Demi down, down, Derry I down. The second one is, without any doubt, how long you'll be travelling this whole world about. Well, get up with the sun and keep up the same pace, and in 24 hours you'll finish the race. Demi down, down, Derry I down. The third one is, that when you do wink, I'm to tell to you presently just what you think. Well, that I can do, so make your grace merry. You think I'm the Bishop of Canterbury. Demi down, down, Derry I down. But you are mistaken in that one alone, for I'm an old shepherd, the bishop's to home. Well, that's all very well, the king said with a smile, but you shall be bishop another while. Demi down, down, Derry I down. There's no use to argue, there's no use to fight, for I can neither read nor write. But you tell the old bishop, you tell him from me, that he'd get a frisky one if he gets me. Demi down, down, Derry I down. Yeah, that's a good one.
You can now rephrase your question about, does Vermont have any tunes?
Well, it is true that Vermont tunes tend to be a little flat, a little blander than Southern Appalachian versions of the same tunes. That is interesting.
What's the explanation?
I don't know, man. It's something to do with character. And character's something to do with where they live. It's probably something to do with the damn weather, actually. It's kind of hard to have floating around tunes when you're out there chopping wood. wading through, I don't know what it is. I mean, they're just different. The Vermont and New Hampshire tunes are just a lot plainer than the Appalachian ones. A lot less lyrical, a lot less up and down movement to them. But very good songs, and the Flanders Collection. There is only one record out so far of it that was issued by Middlebury College sometime in the late 1950s. Very good collection of ballads.
Is that four-volume set still in print, or is it gone out?
That four-volume set.
Flanders, Ballads, that's, is that Ballads Migrant in New England, or is
yeah.
that one or the other one?
Did they put that out recently?
No.
I've never seen it.
I haven't.
They're from the Flanders Collection?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the other one is the New Green Mountain.
You mean the book?
Yeah.
Oh, I meant the records, sorry.
No.
Oh, there's plenty of books out of it. There's a lot of Helen Hartness Flanders book, four volumes of Ballads Migrant, then there's the
yeah.
Green Mountain songs, and then there's Vermont folk songs, and a lot of them. But there's one recording, a record you can get. Middlebury College still have boxes of them left in the basement. Nobody buys them anymore. One of the best records of ballads you could get hold of. It's right to Middlebury College. $7 or $8. It's a great record. But the Library of Congress has now copied all of the things off Cylinder. She mostly used Cylinders and some disc, and they now have them, and so you can actually listen to them there, and I suspect they're going to put out cassettes or something quite soon. Fabulous. A lot of fiddle tunes, wonderful fiddle tunes. Any other questions?
What was that study you were talking about where they correlate with the peat animals? Or
well, the most accessible, it's written in Anthropologies, which is a version of English that social scientists use.
Yeah.
Not a very intelligible version, which I'm allowed to say being a professor of anthropology. But it's the most available text is called Folk Song Style and Culture by Alan Lomax. Yeah, it's what he's been working on for 20 years and using up huge amounts of money from the National Endowment for Humanities. And I don't think he's much further along than he was 20 years ago, but it's a very, you know, it's an attempt to study and prove the obvious is what it is, that how you sing and how you dance is a function of how you live and where you live, and it's an attempt to try and show it in a systematic, quasi-scientific fashion. And that, I think, is the problem, because song style and dance style is a gestalt. And the problem is that when you analyze it down into 33 different characteristics, each of which is interesting in and of itself, you don't know how they fit together. And it's how they fit together that makes for song expression. And unfortunately, you never told the computer how these 33 factors all fit together. They simply all have a score attached to them. And then you do a correlation coefficient with each of these 33 factors. And you do get some interesting statistical indications from it.
It's not just the thematic content of the songs that would differ.
Well, one of the measures is how much redundancy is there in the text. So you tend to find, for example, in cultures that have quite complex democratic societies that are industrialized, that tend to be non-agrarian in base, that tend to be cash-based, that their singing tends to be a lot of words. You know, very few words get repeated. Whereas in cultures that are more agrarian-based, there tends to be a lot of duplication of the text in a song. Fewer words that get repeated a lot.
Less literate
people. Yeah, I was trying to avoid using words like primitive, less literate things, and not to beg the question. You know, that's easy to beg, you know, yes, it's easy, but that doesn't explain, you know, why then other sorts of things happen, because it's all interlinked in the culture. But the most accessible source of it is Folk Song Style and Culture.
That's a new publication?
That's an old one. It's about 15 years old. There is a newer one that you should get at your library, which is, I think, the most interesting product of the work. It's a handbook of cantometrics. And it comes with a book full of cassettes which teach you how to listen for these different features of song style. And they're just fantastic. It's a fantastic document of world music. So there'll be one of the measures will be nasality. And so there'll be this whole, you'll hear examples of nasal singing from all over the world, from and a measure of them, and there'll be samples at the different points in the scale. And it's very interesting to tell you where they come from when you hear pieces of singing on these scales. And it's a fantastic method for ear training.
And what study was that? What's the name?
It's a handbook for teaching people how to do cantometric analysis. So it's called the Handbook of Cantometrics.
Is that part of the Alan Lomax?
Yeah, it's the most recent publication out of it, and don't buy it because it's like $80, $90. But a lot of your public library will have it with this book of cassettes.
Just for curiosity's sake, who does, what parts of the world have the most tight
nasal singing? That's pretty easy to say. You find a culture that tends to have quite repressive attitudes towards male and females and what they should see of each other's bodies, and how strict the upbringing is of girl children in particular, and you'll find nasal singing. And that's one of the strongest correlations, is attitudes towards sexuality. Correlates highly with nasality. Broad, open attitudes towards
sexuality. You want?
Individuals as well as cultures.
It's very much a cultural, I don't know, I wouldn't know. Lomax certainly wouldn't speculate as to whether it then...
I want to ask you a question. Back in the 30s, I used to hear every Saturday afternoon a program going on with John Lomax.
You're a lucky man. I wish I'd been alive then.
And my question was, is that material still available?
Yeah, a lot. Well, I mean, on the radio tapes?
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me if Library of Congress had copies of, you know.
That was when I first became interested.
Well, check with Joe Hickerson, who's the archivist at the Library of Congress in the folk culture section. And they have incredible stuff in there. All practically everything, you know, the Lomax has basically got that whole thing going. They made it large anyway. Someone else started it, really. But John Allen Lomax made that into just an incredible repository. Yeah, I'll bet.
They edited from their own field recordings the first records that were put out by the Library of Congress. Now, the Library of Congress has put out a lot of records of American traditional music. They continue to do it from their archives. A lot of the early ones were what John did. And I would imagine he used a lot of that material for his radio programs.
Yeah.
If they haven't put it out on records, it'll be available in the library.
They'll have copies, probably. Just one thing while we're on the Library of Congress, a lot of you don't know, probably, that your taxes empower you to contact Library of Congress if you're looking for songs, if you're looking for materials. Their job is to supply you with information. I mean, a lot of their time gets spent supplying congressmen and senators with information for songs.
The folk room
is incredible down there, and you can buy copies of field recordings for the cost of doing of making it, labor and the cost of the tape, provided it doesn't have some, you know, hold on it that doesn't let it distribute, but most of those field recordings will distribute, and you can get copies made of them.
Yeah, I know you have to have some kind of permission to go in there. I mean, I used it a long time ago in college, but...
The library, you just go in the library.
Well, there was some kind of special permission you had to have, at least in the folk archives at that
not
time.
Not anymore,
but I think
not
it was
anymore.
Not
you just
really
go in now as a library, and you're asked to listen to a particular field recording, and they'll turn you in there, put the tape on, and give you a pair of headphones.
It's the British Museum, they don't let you into unless you've got a reader's card.
Anyway, sorry, there's a question over here. It's worth exploiting the Library of Congress.
They won't let you into the stacks.
Stacks?
Right,
no. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, stacks you got. But the folk song library is all the books are in one room, you just walk into them.
Oh, yeah, it didn't used to be then.
Yeah, so all the folk song books are.
Will they let you know if they've got recordings of some artists that you're interested in?
Yeah, you drop them a letter and say, I'm interested in songs by X and X and Y and Z, and they'll tell you what they're going.
Did they make a practice of re-recording all kind of folk songs, like radio entertainers back in the 20s?
Well, you have to ask them what they've got. They've got an incredible amount of that stuff, and the folk song archive is now combined with the popular music archive, so that it's all music now, basically, and whether it's off the radio or whatever. So chances are they have a lot of that material. Sing another song if you had any question over here.
Just Bob Carlin included chunks of John Lomax's radio program in his little thing that he had on syndicated public radio recently.
Uh-huh.
A lot
of it's available on record.
Library of Congress
records.
Yeah.
They
must have some recordings of the radio
program. I was thinking of doing a song from the, inspired by the Kipling thing there. The Smuggler's song was from a story about people in what we call the West Country in England. And those people not only made their living smuggling, but also shipwrecking. The standard practice was to put a light on a donkey's back and ride it along the cliff's edge, and the ship just ran in. Those people settled quite densely in the Carolina Banks, where they continued making their living smuggling and wrecking ships, putting lights on the back of, as they went along the beach. You know, and another one of the graveyards of the North Atlantic. And until that nasty bridge was built over to the banks relatively recently, the dialect on the banks was practically identical with that in the West Country of England, broad sort of slurring kind of accent, very, very similar to that you found in the English in Somerset and Devon and Cornwall. And We do a couple of songs from the Banks that were collected by Frank Warner, a very important and perhaps underrated collector in this country. He's probably, his most significant finding was Tom Dooley, or Tom Doola, from Frank Prophet at Beach Mountain up there. And then, of course, Frank Prophet didn't make any money from it, the Kingston Trio did. And they got a ruling of the copyright after the song was no longer a hit, and the judge didn't give them retroactive royalties.
Too bad. They settled out of court.
Yeah, something like that. He made $5, of course. Whatever, $3 the USFL won. Some real big amount like that. Anyway, which one do you want to do?
The Carolina Banks.
Okay. This is very clearly a straight English ballad, which is Carolina Banks.
There were two ships from old England came. Blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. One she was the Queen of Russia, and the other Prince of Wales, cruising down along the coast of Barbary. Step aloft, our jolly bosun cried. Blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. Look ahead, look astern, look weathered and alee. Cruising down along the coast of Barbary. There is no ship ahead, thank you, there is no ship astern. Blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. But there's a ship a-winded, and a lofty ship is she, cruising down along the coast of Barbary. Hail, hail that lofty tall ship. Blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. Are you a man of warsman or a privateer, said he, cruising down along the coast of Barbary? I am not a man of warsman nor a privateer, said he. Blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. But I'm a jolly pirate a-seeking for my fee, cruising down along the coast of Barbary. A broadside, along them we did lay. Blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. Till at length the Queen of Russia shot the pirates' masts away. Cruising down along the coast of Barbary. Oh quarter, the jolly pirate cried. Blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. Well, the quarter I will give you, I will sink you in the tide. Cruising down along the coast of Barbary. Well, we tied them one by one, and we tied them two by two. Blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. And we tied them three by three, and we chunked them in the sea. Cruising down along the coast of Barbary.
No.
Frank collected it as a solo song, and I assume what I was singing was the melody, though I've never been sure. Because I never actually heard Frank sing it, just his two boys, Jeff and Garrett.
And they sing it in harmony. And we thought.
Nice
yes, Frank has a
very good book of Frank Warner's songs that unfortunately only has about 200 out of the 500 songs he collected. In paperback. It's really good.
What's the name of the
Frank Warner, it's called.
I don't know the right of the package. But it will say Frank Warner.
It's a big trade size.
Frank Warner's book of folk songs.
What's it called?
Treasury of American Folk Songs.
Treasury, something of American Folk
Songs. Jeff had copies of it up in a show.
Something of American Folk Songs. One of the things I really like about it is that it's really set up as a book for singers. Unlike Norman Kasdan's book of Songs from the Catskills, that's set up as a book for folklorists. You know, just millions of pages of notes. And the transcriptions are very open, and the songs are set up, and there are plenty of notes, but they're elsewhere mostly, and you just really can get at the songs. The songs are just really readable.
These were the ones that were all from the Outer Banks?
No, he collected a lot in New Hampshire from a woman called Granny Fish, who had a lot of English style, very clearly English songs, seafaring songs actually. She lived in that little neck of New Hampshire. There's 14 miles of coastline in New Hampshire there. And she lived in that neck. There and he still was fighting the Civil War. He was a very old man when Frank collected him in the 1950s, and he was, you know, 80 or something, and he'd either just been born or just lived through the Civil War, and he'd lost all of his, you know, his older brothers had all been killed by rebels, and he was pissed off at the South still. And so he has a lot of songs that are very angry songs about the Civil War, and still had a lot of just real hatred in him from the war. Interesting, a character like that who'd was still of that, very much of that period. And so he just collected all over the up and down. He was head of the YWCA, YMCA, whatever, for many, many years. And avid Christian scientist. He's a very interesting example of what I was saying about regionalizing songs, or them becoming your own. Frank spent all of his life, he was trained as an actor, until he stumbled into folk song collecting, really. And all of his life, he had this wonderful show he would do with these big blown-up pictures of his informants, you know, as they call them, on pieces of cardboard, and he'd show these wonderful faces, and then Frank would attempt to sing the way that this person was singing, and he would put on the accents and the things, and Frank, you know, just had in his ear the whole time, convinced that what he was doing was sounding just like the person. And what he sounded like was Frank Warner.
But he was good.
And he was very good. Frank Warner was very good. It's just that you could never... The only time he could get Frank Warner to sound like Frank Warner was when he gave him a ukulele. And he was a great ukulele player. And then he could sound like Frank Warner. But all these other things, he was convinced that he was sounding just like him. You'd listen there, it's Frank Warner. It was great. He didn't know it, though. You could never convince him of that. No, he says, just like me. This is what they look like, and this is what they sound like. You know? And that's what they look like, all right, but it wasn't.
Those pictures are in the book, too.
Yeah, yeah. They're great pictures. Just these wonderful, craggy faces.
Jeff has huge ones.
Yeah, big ones. That's good. I wanted to do... oh, dear. I have to go down and do my other thing. That's my film collection of English clog dancers has been shown, just been shown, and I'm supposed to go down and talk about it. It's a great plan. Yeah. So let's do... You can do Young Hunting or one of Grammy Fish's? Or?
You want to do Young Hunting?
How about that?
Yeah.
Here's another state that people think of. Do they have any ballads? Massachusetts. Under-collected state. The largest collection of Massachusetts, English language Massachusetts folk songs, is probably that by, what's that blue book? Folk Songs of Old New England. Lynn Scott. Eloise, is it Eloise Lynn Scott? And a lot of good songs from Massachusetts. A lot of good songs from up in Lowell and Lawrence. A lot of good strike songs from up in the Lowell-Lawrence area, folks. And very strong other ethnicities in Massachusetts. A lot of Portuguese folklore, increasing a lot of Chinese folklore, very strong Italian folklore and folk song. But a lot of good ballads found throughout Massachusetts. Helen Hartness Flanders found a lot of the ballads migrant in New England. You know, her biggest area of collecting was in Vermont, but she went all over the place, went throughout Massachusetts, she went to Rhode Island. And New England's a real largely untapped area. We think of, you know, American ballads, think Kentucky and Virginia and the South, you know. And it's true, I think New England's been somewhat neglected, certainly in the last 20 years New England's really been neglected, but there are. That, was it called the New Century series of records that somebody funded? There were 100 records that they gave only to libraries. You couldn't buy them. They had, black and white covers, and the Peytons did one of New England folk songs. There's one called Blow Boys Blow. Is that what it is? And it's of all singers collected in the last 10 years, you know, in New England. And still very active, vigorous folk song tradition. And this is a version of the ballad that Charles called Young Hunting from Massachusetts up in the Lowell area. So they call it False Lady. And it has a very English style ending with you'll see in a minute. Abide, abide, true love, she said, beg and stay all night. You shall have pleasure in my room with the coal and the candlelight, light with the coal and the candlelight. I won't abide, you false lady, and beg and stay all night, for I have a far better love to enjoy when I go home than you, when I go home than you. As he stooped over saddlebow to kiss her lips so sweet, and with a penknife in her hand she wounded him full deep, deep, she wounded him full deep. Why woundest me, a false lady, why woundest me so sore? There's not a doctor in all Scotland can heal my mortal wound, can heal my mortal wound. She awoke her maids in the morning, just at the break of day, saying, there's a dead man in my bedchamber, I wish he was away, away, I wish he was away. Some took him by the lily-white hands, others by the feet, and they threw him into a very deep well, full 50 fathom deep, deep, full 50 fathom deep. Lie there, you false young man, lie there alone, and let the one that you love best think you're long a coming home, home, long a coming home. Spoke a pretty little bird sitting in the tree, an ill death may you die, lady, for he had no love but thee, he had no love but thee. Come down, my pretty little bird, sit upon my knee, for I have a golden cage at home that I will give to thee, that I will give to thee. I won't come down, you false lady, and sit upon your knee, for you have slain your own true love, and I'm sure you would slay me, I'm sure you would slay me. I wish I had my bow to bend, my arrow and my string, I'd shoot you through the very heart, among the leaves of green, green, among the leaves of green. Well, if you had your bow to bend, your arrow and your string, I'd take my wings and away I'd fly. You'd never see me again, again. You'd never see me again. In many of the American versions, it's not a bird that speaks, a supernatural bird. It's a serving man who comes down and said, hey, why'd you kill him? You know, he didn't have another true love. The whole supernatural thing is gone. And the the sort of hint of necrophilia is usually removed too. There's a dead man in my dead chamber. I wish he was away. And but usually the talking bird is missing. In most, I don't know of an Appalachian version that has the bird, but the New England ones often do. Come down.
I've heard several different songs.
Does that have the bird in it?
Yeah, it's got the bird in it.
The Henry Lee one does. That's a good one. I first heard that on the Frank Smith collection of records. That's a 6-record set that Coakley's put out. Anybody know that collection? That's a collection of records you ought to know. It's 6, there's 3 volumes in
Harry
pairs.
Smith.
Harry Smith, is it?
You're confusing him with Frank C. Brown.
Oh, Frank C. Brown, there you go. Harry Smith put out, they were reissues of old 78s put out by Folkways in 3 volumes.
In the middle 1950s?
Yeah, in the 50s, and of course, as all the Folkways things are, still in print. Incredible stuff. One's just ballads and songs, and then there's religious music and a lot of good ballads on there. Mostly, interestingly, mostly accompanied ballads, what they got when they started doing musical recordings in that period of time was accompanied ballads. You know, Sharp, when he ran, there's an interesting study, fortunately, being in the middle of the summer, I don't remember who did it, but there's an interesting study comparing the statistics of unaccompanied songs collected by Sharp when he went around in Virginia and Kentucky and those places, and then from the same places 15 years later, when the music industry came around with recording things to put records out, comparing the statistics then of unaccompanied ballads, it goes from, like, you know, 98% unaccompanied that Sharp collected. He found one lady in Virginia who accompanied herself on the guitar, and he mentions that she played a guitar, but it was very unusual, you know, and it was mostly, it was 80% English ballads, you know. 15 years later, they go around, and it's like 15% English ballads and 98% accompanying themselves on banjo or guitar or fiddle or something, you know. What had gone on, and what this man argues is there are really 2 layers of the tradition, at least, one of which is the domestic tradition, people sounding unaccompanied to their family, and out in the grange, the medicine shows, the public situations, people accompanied themselves, and it's just Sharp was clearly feeding into the domestic tradition, and for the more public one, the singers look to to perform with more instrumentation and accompaniment, and a whole different kind of comic song that was appropriate to that. A singer you can really hear at least 3 different styles in is Gene Ritchie. Gene has one singing style that's sort of domestic ballads, and then there's another one for the sort of lyric and comic songs, and then there's a whole a religious style of singing. And she has different voices for each one, too, just quite different singing styles for each one.
Is Henry Smith actually a performer on these, or he collected?
Harry Smith just edited the old 78s together.
He was a collector of old 78s.
Excuse me, I'm going to have to run down and try and do
that. And he put them out. It's quite extensive. It's 3 box sets, and I think each box has 2 or 3 albums, I'm not sure which.
Two,
thank you. I only have it on tape. we'll do a couple of songs to wind up. Cecil Sharp came through the Southern Appalachians, and his stuff was published in 2 volumes, English Folk Songs from the Southern Appalachians. He tended just to collect and just to publish the songs which were of British origin. There's a lot of excellent songs in that. One of the nicest versions I've heard of The Froggy Went A-Courting. If I can remember how it goes. Froggy went a-courting and he did ride, cha-willy. Froggy went a-courting and he did ride, cha-willy-wee. Froggy went a-courting and he did ride, sword and a pistol by his side, with a ling-tum dilly come a ling-tum day, cha-willy-wee, something like that. Anyway, really nice. A lot of the stuff that you would hear on early Joan Baez recordings came out of Cecil Sharp and from other Appalachian sources, a lot of the British ballads that she sang. There's an Appalachian ballad called Locks and Bolts. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that. One of the versions that I know goes, I dreamed of my true love last night, all in my arms I held her, But when I woke, it was not so. I was forced to lie without her. That tells a story. I thought I might sing an English variant of that one, where it comes from. It comes from the south of England, so you get the idea of the story anyway. It was over the hills, it was over the hills, it was over the hills and the valley, where my true love was sent from me, quite out of spite and malice. I went unto my love's father's house, inquiring for my jewel. The answer was, she is not at home, she's at her uncle's housekeeping. So I went down to her uncle's house, inquiring for my jewel. The answer was, she is not here, which proved to my heart so cruel. But this fair maid, hearing all of his voice, put her head out of the window. She said, young man, you're welcome here, but locks and bolts do hinder. He stood a moment all in amaze and wonder. Then a passion flew, the sword he drew, and the door he burst asunder. Her uncle's servant be standing by, straight after he did follow. He said, young man, you must quit this room, or in your own blood wallow. He took his sword all in his right hand, his love all in the other. He said, if you have more rights than I, find one or two, take the other. So now this couple are in wedlock joy, they do adore each other. They oft-times think all on that night, when the dawn he burst asunder. Little ballad with a happy ending. They're rare. A lot of them tend to get very bloodthirsty.
What was the name of it?
That's called Locks and Bolts. It's one of there's a number of ballads where there are various trials to the her lover rescuing her for one thing or another. There's a similar one often found in Irish variants. And then there's other trials that one gets. One of the ones that I like, Mike Seeger sings a song called "The Lady of Carlisle." In Carlisle, there lived a lady, and she was courted by two fellows, and she wanted to see which one was the truest and bravest. So she threw her glove into the lion's den, and said to them, "Go and fetch it." I don't actually know a version of this. The one refuses, and the other one goes and gets it and comes back, and she says, take the prize that you have won. In one variant, he tells her to go shove it, because which I think is rather nice. But usually it ends that way. There's a good Irish version of that one, too. We've got time for one more song. We'll do another chorus. This is one from Lena Fish up in New Hampshire. Lena Bourne Fish. There's another one. This is so obviously English that we were convinced when we heard Jeff Warner sing it that there had to be English variants. And so we finally heard Peter Bellamy sing it, and we said, there it is, and we asked him where he got it from, and he said, well, he learned it from Jeff Warner. But chorus goes, come along, come along. We're back in, well, American songs that deal with drink. So we're turning full circle. Come along, me jolly brave boys. There's plenty more grog in the jar. We'll plow the briny ocean with a jolly roving tar. Ships may come and ships may go, as long as the sea's to run. And a sailor lad likewise is done, he loves this port and rum. Alas, a shiny day went on, one that is plump and round. But when your money's gone, it's the same old song, get up, Jack Johnson town. Come along, me jolly brave boys, there's plenty more grog in the jar. On the briny ocean away, the jolly roving tar. When Jack's ashore, he'll make his way to some old Baldy house. He's welcome in with rum and gin, likewise with ale and souse. He'll spend and spend and not offend, till he lies drunk on the ground. But when your money's gone, it's the same old song, get up, Jack Johnson town. Come along, me jolly brave boys, there's plenty more grog in the jar. And the briny ocean away, the jolly roving tar. Jack then will ship aboard some ship for India or Japan. But in Asia then the ladies fair, they love the sailor man. He'll spend and not offend, till he lies drunk on the ground. But when your money's gone, it's the same old song, get up, Jack Johnson town. Come along, me jolly brave boys, there's plenty more grog in the jar. The plow the briny ocean away, the jolly roving tar. When Jack is old and weather beat, too old to sail about, they'll let him stop in some grog shop till eight bells do ring out. Then he'll raise his hands high into the sky, say, God, I'm homeward bound. But when your money's gone, it's the same old song, get up, Jack Johnson town. Come along, me jolly brave boys, there's plenty more grog in the jar. Pound of briny ocean away, jolly roving tar.